T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Who can it be now? Who is that?
Who are you?
Who can it be now?
Who is he?
Who the hell are you?
Back here in OMF, obviously we're doing it all from our Shars and Star Market, WEEI Studios, all doing it from home.
I'm at the deli counter.
You're in the backyard. I'm looking at you right now.
No,
you're in the backyard.
I am not in the... That is a green screen...
Those
are not
birds.
You
have a little
backdrop.
That's very good.
That is not the dog barking. That is not the trampoline with the kids on it. And it's definitely not the guy fixing my windows.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it is. So let's give you the hints again. Ben Volen wrote about the Patriots moving up to draft Tua. Apparently, this person ripped it, right? Is that fair to say? Is that what you said, Tyler? Ripped it, right?
Yeah, totally shut it down.
Okay, there you go. Ex-athlete, no. Ex-coach, no. Worked for ESPN, yes. ESPN personality, also a writer. I think that was yes. ESPN male, no. ESPN big show co-host, a big yes. And our mystery guest, I'm going to tell you who it is, Christian.
Oh, I see. I know. I think I know who it is because you gave me the hint. I think I know. You said former big show co-host.
Yes. She was good. She was good on the
Nix
show, too.
Wendy Nix.
Let's check and see if it is.
This next mystery guest started as an intern at the Boston Globe and went on to collaborate with Larry Bird, Shaquille O'Neal, and Magic Johnson to author best-selling books. In 2010, she became the first woman to receive the Kurt Gowdy Media Award from the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame. Okay, mystery guest, reveal yourself.
Not Wendy Nix. Hey, guys. Jackie McMullen from ESPN.
Hey!
I wish that was Wendy Nix. I'd love to be Wendy Nix. She's awesome.
She is awesome, and Jackie McMullen is awesome as well. It's great to talk to you again, Jackie. How are you doing? How's the family? How's Mike? Everybody good?
Everybody's good here. We're all separated. The kids are elsewhere because they live elsewhere, but we're hanging in. We're trying not to kill each other. You know, it's all good.
Well, thank you very much for doing this, and you did get us a little bit off guard here because
I don't remember you ripping
Ben Volen. That was you.
I didn't rip Ben Volen, man. I just listen. I still have numbers in my phone that with regards to the Patriots. I read the story. I shot a text. It got shot down, so I shot it down. Not ripping Ben, just shooting it down.
Yeah, it's funny because the whole Tua thing. I was like, okay, so somebody who was responding to Tua must be a football-related analyst, female analyst. But I forget, you do all those other shows.
She does everything now.
You cover everything, right?
Well, I cover mostly the NBA, but when I put my around the horn hat on, we have to spend a lot of time keeping up to speed on all the sports. Which, to be honest, now that I'm really writing mostly about the NBA, is very challenging because you got to try to stay away to keep current in these other sports and try to maintain what little context you might have after all the time. It's been a long time since I've been down to Foxborough to cover the Patriots. It's been a long time.
So I know you did an awful lot on the post show after on ESPN with the Last Dance. As you were watching that thing play out, and you were a big part of it, you were in it, what was your take?
Well, I was fascinated by it just because I mean I've been around Jordan a lot. You were too, Glenn, and I always tell everybody I grew up with Michael Jordan in this business. We're only a couple of years apart in age, and I had the benefit of talking to him before he was a champion and an icon. And they used to practice in Deerfield, remember that place? It was like a strip mall, and after practice he'd be lifting weights next to some Joe Schmo from Peoria. I mean, it was crazy when you think about it. Back, this is all the way back in the late 80s, early 90s. And so I got a chance to see maybe the more gracious side of him, I guess I would say, the more emotional side of him. And to me, the moment of the doc was when, you know, he started talking about hearing about what all his ex-teammates said about him, and people call him, you know, words we can't say on the radio. And, you know, was he nice? Not really. And you know, his emotions. And I think his point was, don't you understand? I did this for you guys. I did this so you could win. I was going to win anyway. I dragged you guys along so you could win. And I think there was a combination of frustration and a little sadness in his mind that they couldn't understand that. The other thing, too, is Michael Jordan, you know, is very happily remarried. He has twin daughters. He just adores them. You should hear him gush about them. And they don't know anything about their dad, probably, really. And so they were probably watching that doc, you know, and those kind of things. The emotion that we saw from Michael was the most surprising to me.
So I'd really like to get your take on, because you were really plugged in early on. You're right. I had a good relationship with Michael Jordan. Doing the Celtics games, he would come on the pregame and the postgame. He was as accessible as any superstar I have ever dealt with. And you joke and laugh with him and whatever. And then he suddenly developed that entourage around him. And we saw some of that when the gambling issues came up or whatever. Mm-hmm. And suddenly everything was surrounded around him. Were you able to maintain that contact, because you were really plugged in?
Well, I mean, I think what helped me was I wasn't covering the Bulls day-to-day, so I didn't have to cover him with the same scrutiny that those day-to-day writers did. And, you know, we experienced this, Glenn, with Larry and Kevin and those guys when things, you know, when there were some controversial things regarding Larry and the day-to-day people, you know, those are always the ones that suffer, especially if they're doing their job. And so I was lucky because near the end of his time, the second three-peat, I would just pop in. You know, I was a national NBA writer at that time. I'd pop into Chicago for a few days, and he'd be actually happy to see me because I was a different face and someone that had a different view on it. And it was a lot easier for me to maintain that relationship with Michael doing that. But I will tell you, you know, I had to write a first person for this before the doc started. And one of the things I wrote was near the end when I used to go to Chicago, I very rarely saw Michael Jordan hanging out with his teammates. And you saw it in the doc. He was with the security guards. He was with Gus. Gus Lett was his constant companion, mm-hmm. the security guard who watched out for him. And we now find out from the doc, someone that Michael was calling in the middle of the night, sobbing, trying to reconcile the death of his own dad, and Gus kind of became a surrogate father. So the people that Michael surrounded him with for that last three-peat were people that he knew he could trust. His inner circle, you know, George, who was one of his closest friends and his driver, guys from North Carolina, those teammates from that last, you know, the last part of the three-peat, I don't think many of them got to know Michael Jordan very well at all. In fact, in the doc, Steve Kerr says he just really wasn't emotionally available to us. And he couldn't be, because it was insane how famous he was and how much everybody wanted a piece of him.
You know, Jackie, I think there's a huge comparison between Jordan and Brady. Even you just mentioned mm-hmm. how Jordan used to hang out with Gus. And for Brady, right. you know, it's kind of Alex Guerrero. You know, right, it's like, right. you know, that relationship, that they're, you know, how much he relies on him, he confides in him. Do you feel like that's, and even the competitive
Absolutely.
Atmosphere of each guy, how they yell and they scream and they demand a lot from the people around them?
Absolutely. And, you know, covering Brady all those years as I did, and that's how I got to know you, Christian, was, you know, he used to call me on the way down to the practice facility. You'd have to get up early. And, I would see him in the locker room and I'd just say, hey, can you give me, I was judicious. I didn't ask a bunch. Can you give me, I'll call you at 7 a.m. on my way down. And, you know, that was an easy thing to do. He was gracious about it, did a lot. And then you win more Super Bowls. Everybody wants a piece of you.
Yeah.
There's no place you can go in peace. And I do see similarities to it. And also, the other similarity is when you get to the top, what happens? People want to tear you down. Unfortunately, it's human nature. I don't understand that part of human nature, but I've watched it happen to so many superstars. We want to build them up, and then people get tired of them, and they want to tear them down. And I think what happens is if you're Jordan or you're Brady, you get a little wounded because you've tried to be, you know, helpful and open with everybody, and then you start to close in, and you start to trust less people, and you also start to take control of your own narrative. And I think that's what Tom has done much more so than Michael did. I'll tell you a funny little thing. After I wrote this first person that I just told you about my experiences covering Michael Jordan, because I went down to Birmingham when he played baseball, and after I wrote that, I got a text from Stacey James from the Patriots who said, I thought you'd like to know, Tom called me to tell me that he wanted you to know he really liked your Jordan story. And I wonder why he liked it. I bet he really, really can relate to it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're so similar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're talking to Jackie McMullen.
You know, very gracious, both of them. Very gracious, always, I found.
Anyway. Okay, let me ask you this in talking about it. And as a journalist over the years and somebody who's written and been involved in documentaries with the Bird and Magic thing, and we just talked about Michael Jordan putting this thing together. He was heavily involved. He had control of this thing. Today, ESPN announced they're doing a 9-part documentary with Tom Brady. And Tom Brady, and it's just, I guess, coincidence that it comes like a week after The Last Dance is over. It's going to air next year, early 2021. He's still playing in the game, not even removed from the game. Forget about it, hardly removed from the game. And I'm wondering, is this a new trend now? And that professional athletes don't have to go through journalists, don't have to go through people who write documentaries or write books that turn into documentaries. They now can present their own brand, their own self, the way they want to present it. You've already seen Horace Grant, Scottie Pippen have come out and lashed out at the Jordan thing.
Right.
Well, they're lashing out because Jordan controlled it. And Bird's going to control this one. Is this where we're going?
Well, I don't think so, and here's why. Because there's only a handful of people that we really care about enough to watch an 8-part, 9-part, 10-part series. Michael Jordan is one. Tom Brady is another. I imagine there's an appetite outside of Boston anyway for LeBron James. It's only a handful of people. And I've seen it in our industry. You know, Kevin Durant has his own production company. He did something with our, I probably shouldn't be disparaging it because it was in partner with ESPN. It wasn't that good. See, that's the thing. You know, now Tom Brady, the gentleman he's working with, is excellent, and the Jordan, just the access alone and the insight alone, because they're icons. But I don't think that's going to be true with your everyday superstar. I think there's a difference between superstar and icon. I think you guys would probably agree.
Yeah, definitely. So you know, so the NBA, lots of question marks on all these sports, specifically with the NBA. What are you hearing, not only from the GMs and the coaches, but the players, are they all in lockstep, or do you think there's a lot of dissension in the ranks?
I wouldn't say a lot of dissension, but there's concern. There should be concern, right, for the safety of the players. I will say this. It's really a testament to Adam Silver how much trust the players, the coaches, the GMs, and the owners have put in Adam Silver. And I think the reason he's earned that trust is he's made it very clear to everybody, look, I want to play. I understand what's at stake, you know, financially and otherwise, you know, the legacy of the game, all of those things. But safety has to come first. We cannot compromise the safety of either A, our players, or B, the rest of the world population. We are not going to put ourselves in a position where we have advances or allowances that the rest of the general population does not have available to them. And I think that's really important. And because the NBA, what they're telling is, we're not going to do this if we're going to get things available to us that are not available to the average citizen. And that's why I think it's a bit of a long shot that they can pull this off.
I'm with you. I think it's very difficult. I think there are too many things that have to be involved, and especially if you're doing it in one specific area, you have to bring all these different staff members in. You need people to be able to execute all of this stuff. I think it's going to be very hard. Before we let you go, I've got to ask you about the Jordan and gambling thing, because when this thing all came out, I actually talked to two people that were high up in the organization in the NBA during that whole period, and both were adamant, very similar to what David Stern said, I believe, in Chapter 7 or whatever, that there was too much money. There was money in Michael Jordan. They did not want Jordan to leave. Yet, you know, the rumor out there is that they pushed him out, told him to go away for a year because they thought he was involved in gambling. What do you know?
Well, I mean, what I know from my own investigation that we all did back in that day and since is this. David Stern was a really bright man. Why would you remove the biggest star in your game for a full calendar year? How does that make sense on any level? David Stern, in the past, when he had controversies, what did he do? He buried them, minimized them down to nothing. He did it with Donaghy. He did it with Donald Sterling, who was doing horrific things on David Stern's watch.
30 years.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. So David Stern, if he had a problem, knew how to bury it, and he didn't suspend them for a year. So I really don't think, listen, does Michael Jordan gamble too much? Of course he does, but I thought I was one of the best lines in the doc. I don't have a gambling problem. I have a competition problem. And you know what?
Says every gambler.
The problem, right, the problem was the people that played with Michael Jordan, like Antoine Walker, who couldn't afford to lose the amount that he lost. Charles Barkley, who wasn't on the same financial stratosphere that Michael Jordan. Those were the guys that were in trouble.
But the great competitive guys, they always think they can beat everybody at everything, at cards and golf and everything else. And maybe he just wasn't good enough in golf. And that's why he had to hand over a $57,000 check to Slim Poulin, right?
No, that's right. That's right. Look, there was plenty of smoke there, but I really believe that David Stern looked at it and said, I need Michael Jordan. Does he have some warts? Yes. Look, you know this better than I do, Glenn. What about all the warts of the other players that were far more serious? Mm-hmm. I mean, what about the ex-NBA star who had gang ties, who may or may not have put a hit out on one of his teammates' girlfriends?
Ooh.
Well, I'm just saying, these were the kind of things that were going on.
That's Jackie's next book.
But anyway, I'm just telling you, so my point is that, you know, that Stern style was bury it, snuff it out, there's smoke, let's stomp this out, let's get rid of the smoke, let's move on. That's how he did things. So if you know, he really felt that Jordan had a gambling thing that was going to hurt the league, that's what he would have done. I just can't, and under any scenario, I can't imagine him telling him, go away for a year and come back. I just don't see it.
All right, one more. I promise that was going to be the last one, but I can't. There's too much when you have Jackie on the show. And the reason I have to bring this one up, we saw an awful lot of Dennis Rodman. You and I had dealings with Dennis Rodman during all of that stuff. Dennis Rodman's on national TV this morning trying to tell people what's going on with Kim Jong-un over in North Korea.
Yeah.
He's the guy that knows everything. Right. How do you look at Rodman and how anybody could take him seriously other than he was a ferocious rebounder and defensive player? Other than that, I don't know what all your dealings were, but you know that whole situation with him and Isaiah, with Larry, and about, you know, if he were a black guy, he'd just be another, you know, good player or something. I mean, crazy.
No, I know. But you know what? I still deal with Dennis Rodman regularly. Last year when his documentary came out, I did the sit-down with him, his one sit-down in advance of that documentary. Dennis used to call me in the middle of the night at my home in Watertown when Mike and I were first married, usually inebriated. He would never remember calling me the next day. No, he has a terrible... He's an alcoholic. He's a recovering alcoholic. He's doing the best he can. But everything you see of him, this is the struggle he's having. When I first met Dennis Rodman, he was in jeans and sneakers. No piercings, no tattoos. He was just a kid from Southeast Oklahoma who didn't believe he was good as he was. He's never believed in himself. To me, it's one of the most tragic people I've ever been around. I adore him. I know this sounds crazy to people, because he's done bad things, but it's usually tied to alcohol. When he's been in treatment a number of times. Penny Marshall, the late Penny Marshall, tried to get him clean and sober. People have tried to help him, but you can't be helped if you don't believe in yourself. And it's very, very sad. When he's right, he's as kind and he's got a good heart. And he was a phenomenal basketball player and a very smart basketball player too. People make the mistake of thinking he wasn't right. But listen. Alcohol is a demon, and everyone knows that, and it makes people do really bad things and really dumb things and really regrettable things, and it's still a demon that is hounding Dennis Rodman, and I pray every time that I talk to him that he's sober and that he's good. And I talked to him a few weeks ago for the story I did regarding Scottie Pippen, and we had a really good conversation. He had made a very passionate argument supporting his friend Scottie Pippen. But, you know, 2 weeks from now, it could be a different conversation. It's a lifelong battle for him.
Well, then now I got to jump in now because you mentioned Scottie Pippen. Just hold off with the breaks because we have a legend on the phone. So we got to get as many questions in as possible. I thought Scottie Pippen, you know, if you only saw that series, you would think that Scottie Pippen was selfish, lazy, egotistical.
Right.
You would just have all these negative aspects of him, and yet – I have a feeling he's not like that. I don't know him personally.
No, he's not.
But now I don't think he's happy about the way he was portrayed. And obviously, Fair's got nothing to do with it. But damn, you could have if you felt like he was so important to you, Michael Jordan, and you have control over this series, why not paint him in a different light and not highlight all the negative things that happened during that career?
Yeah, I thought Scottie got a short shift, and I'm not sure it was intentional because I think Michael Jordan is very fond of Scottie Pippen to this day. I think early Michael Jordan found Pippen, you know, wasn't sure he could trust Pippen. I think Jordan would tell you he thought he was a little soft, which I never thought was really fair. The guy played with a migraine, you know?
Yeah.
It's not like he didn't play. He tried to play through it. But I think, you know, Jordan Bird, you know this about Bird, Glenn. Bird used to be like that. What do you mean you won't play with a dislocated elbow? I would. Well, that doesn't mean everybody else is as crazy as you, right? But later on, the last round of it, they were close. Like, again, I mentioned to you when I used to drop in there that he was often with Gus Lett. The only players I ever saw him really breaking bread with during those final couple years was Ron Harper and Scottie Pippen. He and Scottie, you know, he came to really trust and care about Scottie. Now, I don't think he even realizes when you string it all together like it happened in this doc, the picture you painted of Scottie Pippen. What really bothered me the most, guys, was at the very end there, they showed, you know, the last two, but they showed Scottie Pippen missing a couple of free throws in that Utah series.
Yeah.
What they didn't show was just before Karl Malone was trying to hit those crucial free throws, Scottie Pippen delivering the best trash talk line of all time, "The mailman don't deliver on Sundays." Why isn't that in the doc?
Yeah.
You know? So I understand Scottie's frustration. I've gotten to know Scottie very well because I work with him now on The Jump and on other ESPN platforms. And he's a very, very sensitive guy. It's his biggest strength and his biggest weakness, quite frankly. And I wish that he hadn't said in the doc, you know, if I could do it over, I would do the same thing again. I wish he hadn't said that. But I will tell you this. You can understand why he felt disrespected by Phil Jackson. He waited his entire career to be the number one guy. And when Jordan left, he became the number one guy, and they did much better than anyone thought they would do that year. The Bulls won 50-something games, and Scottie Pippen was the leader of that team. And now you go into Madison Square Garden, that's a tie game, and you draw up the play for the guy that Jerry Krause signed, who had never played a game for the Bulls, and signed for almost twice as much money as Scottie Pippen, who had already helped you win three championships. Can we all understand a human moment? Because that's what that was to me. He apologized immediately afterwards to his teammates. By all accounts, was in tears in the locker room. Did he do the right thing? No. Did he apologize? Yes. Was there more to the story? He won three more championships for you. Let's give this dude a break.
Yeah, it's amazing when stuff like that happens. Obviously, you look at it and say, how could a competitive athlete, a team player, sit there and do stuff like that? And yet, when you take three steps back and you sit there and say, wait a minute, there's no Michael here, right? And Horace Grant brought that up. He doesn't understand why they included it in the documentary because it's not about Michael. Right. Michael wasn't there.
Right.
And he threw that out. One more. I can't help it. We're blowing it. We're moving the commercials around.
Let's just keep going.
Jackie's too good. There's too many stories. She knows too much about the world. I got to bring up Jerry Krause because I knew Krause as you knew Krause. And,
yep.
And he was a different type of guy and whatever. But I thought he really got a pretty bad shake in this deal. Yep. Real bad shake.
But he deserved a lot of that, Glenn.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah.
You know, what I would say about Jerry Krause was he was so talented at what he did. The problem with Jerry was he never stopped long enough to let other people say how great he was. He was so insecure and so paranoid and so worried about getting credit that he never let anybody say it. He had to say it before they did, you know? If he had just sat back and said, I'm so proud of these players, they're amazing, let's just all celebrate them, somebody would have said, and Jerry, thank you for what you did, you built this. But he never even did that. He was so jealous of Phil, for instance, who he felt he plucked out of obscurity in the CBA, and then Phil went on to this meteoric career. And, you know, I think he was like, He couldn't deal with that. And so it's a shame because he was very, very good at what he did, but he was never going to be one of the guys. You know, he tried to be one of the guys.
Yeah, from the get-go, Jackie, he lacked respect because they all thought he was a baseball guy. Even though his real roots were back in basketball, he had spent the last few years as a baseball scout. And so they're all sitting there going, Reinsdorf's putting in one of these baseball dudes. You know, what are they doing?
You know what else, Glenn? He kept telling them how good he was.
Yeah.
He should have just showed them. Because he did show them, by the way. Think about what he did. He literally reinvented the Bulls from one dynasty to the next with only two common denominators on the court, Pippen and Jordan. He plugged in and plugged out players beautifully, masterfully. And by the way, Tony Kukoc was a very good player.
Sure was.
Now, was he perfect? No. He made some mistakes in drafting, as anyone will. You know, that's true of all the great GMs, our own Danny Ainge included, you know. But it's just a shame that if he had just stopped and allowed someone else to pat him on the back, I think his legacy would have been completely different.
Yeah, there's no question that he took a beating. And maybe that's the way Michael wanted it. You know, it seems that
Michael and Scotty had disdain for him. They did. Yeah. They had great disdain for him. And Phil, I thought, was very generous because I remember I went there in 96, the 96-97 season. I went down to Chicago for a few days, and I sat down with Phil in his office. I was working at Sports Illustrated at the time. And I kept hearing about Tim Floyd. Why was Tim Floyd around? What was going on, you know? And Phil told me that day, it was right before the playoffs, that he had a clause in his contract that Todd Musburger, Brent Musburger's brother, was his agent, put in, that he could negotiate with other teams for their head coaching job during the playoffs.
Wow.
How crazy is that? And I said, how did this happen? Like, where did you and Jerry go wrong? Why is Jerry Krause talking about Tim Floyd, and why is Tim Floyd around? And he said, I'll never forget it. Phil said to me, well, Jerry's very enamored with Tim Floyd. And then he looked at me and he smiled and he said, he was very enamored with me once. And I thought, that's it in a nutshell, you know?
Unbelievable. There's so much there. And the 10 hours were awesome. And this a half an hour here is awesome with you. It's great catching up with you. We really appreciate you doing this. And stay well and say hi to Mike for me, all right?
Yeah, and tell Lou that I'm my feelings are hurt that he isn't there.
We just wanted today.
Yeah, we were greedy, Jackie. We didn't, Glenn Hogg's enough of the microphone as it is. So I mean, there's better that it was just two. I felt like this was a threesome that I got iced out of.
Christian, you know I love you.
I love you too.
Have a great day.
Thank you. You too, Jackie McMullen, our mystery guest today.
Who is that?
Who are you?
Who can it be now?
Who is he?
Who the hell are you?
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Man in the arena. We'll get to that in a couple minutes. Tom Brady announcing today, or ESPN announcing, that he's producing a 9 documentary series or whatever. It's something that Jackie McMullen probably will do more of, because not only is she a great writer, but she has been involved in these documentaries before. The Bird and Magic one, which was terrific.
I have the biggest crush on Jackie McMullen.
Well, you should.
I have
She's
for
great.
Years. I have for years. She is so good at her job. It just turns me on. Not that I want to like get all weird or anything like that. It's a respectful crush, I would say. It's a very respectful crush. She's so smart.
Yes.
And when she talks, I am just on the edge of my seat with everything that she says, the stories that she tells, how she tells them, her tone, her inflection, her pacing. She's just a joy to listen to.
So
wait a second, before I start, I mentioned this. I said I felt like I was part of a threesome and I got iced out. I felt like this was a threesome that I got iced out of. You guys just, hello, I am here. It's like you walked down memory lane. It's like, hello, can I get in a little bit? Let me just kind of come up. Can I get a, nope, nothing? All right, I'm leaving.
Couldn't even use those sparkling, brilliant eyes of you to get any attention.
No, it didn't work.
I will say the thing that I admire the most about Jackie McMullen over the years is, as I said, she had phenomenal context, and she just knew everybody and people in the league, the top people in the league, and players just trusted her. And yet she was not one of these who was just going to write softball stuff. she would write negative stuff about people. She would say stuff on TV that was negative about these guys. And yet she would still maintain contact, which tells me that those people all had respect for her. And they realized that she was doing it because maybe there was some truth to it. Well, she's terrific. I can't say enough great things about Jackie.
And Wendy Nix is the same way.
Yes.
See, I remember, so I got to know Jackie just based on the fact that, you know, it, you know, all so many people were coming in to Gillette during the years I was there because we were so good, lots of personality, lots of great players. It was fun. It was like Rome. Like, that's where you need, if you were a journalist, especially for the football, you needed to be in Foxborough. Okay. And everybody came down. So many careers were launched because of the Patriots, how good they were, how much exposure, how many times they were in the Super Bowl, and all the different storylines. There was so much material to write on. Wendy was the same way. Wendy would roll into the locker room, and there was this respect for her because she was just so good at her job. And she was on your show. That's how we thought it actually was.
Yes.
We thought the mystery guest was Wendy Nix.
Well, I should have.
Note to Tyler. Think about that one.
The football thing, I'll give it to Tyler. He got me with the football thing. I thought it was one of those arguments on football, not realizing, obviously, at the time, because I always think of Jackie and basketball, and that's not fair because she does all of these shows and says other things. And I didn't think of Jackie ripping Ben Volen, but as I just said, Jackie's pretty honest.
Christian, you know I love you.
Did you catch that she said she'd check with her Patriot sources, and that's why she downplayed it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. How about the fact that Dennis Rodman is straight up calling her in the middle of the night? How about this? You're married to Jackie McMullen. She covers the NBA, right? So I can understand, you know, some husbands being a little insecure about their wife running around with a bunch of professional athletes. Sure enough, Dennis Rodman calls her up in the middle of the night.
Drunk.
I was like, baby, why is he calling you? What is he? And he's calling you drunk. He's drunk dialing you. That's a booty call. What is going on? I mean, it's crazy, but it was just like, all right, it's Dennis, whatever.
You don't think Carmen Electra was able to kind of emotionally help him through the crap he was going through?
Apparently not, Ryan. Apparently not.
I needed
Jackie at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Jackie, please help.
It didn't quite work. I'm sure she's got some phenomenal. We could have done an hour on just Dennis Rodman.
Easily.
Stories, but
easily.
I've got a few myself, but she's got a zillion of them, I'm sure. Just crazy. But I brought it up because I was just reading this morning that, you know, Dennis Rodman is now doing national news interviews about how he's telling us that if Kim Jong-un's sister suddenly shows up on TV or whatever, then there's something really wrong with his buddy. But he thinks he's okay. And I'm sitting here going, are you kidding me? We're sitting here talking about a dictator, and Dennis Rodman is the one that's going to give us the signal as to whether he's dead, whether he's had heart failure or he's alive.
So Dennis Rodman is the black smoke that comes out of the chimney when a new pope. He's the black smoke. Hey, be nervous, everybody.
So I wanted you, this is not a squirrel moment because it continues on to what we were talking about, but you said this to me before the show. So we've all been watching on NBC Sports Boston, and NBA Network has done some of this as well, and they're running all of these old games. So we're getting to see all of these championship games, and there have been great games this week, games that I broadcast. So to me, it was a big deal. Houston Rockets games and the Lakers games, obviously. And you came up with an observation that totally changed your mind about stuff. And I'm shocked at this because I've always believed this. But you suddenly came up with something all new.
I have an emotional attachment to 80s basketball, especially the Lakers and the Celtics.
I do too.
Especially the Lakers because growing up there, just watching them all the time. And I had this
Michael Cooper,
Dancing Barry, Byron Scott, Kurt Rambis, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I mean, there's just goes on and up. So many guys. Even Pat Riley. I imagine his hair being more oiled down back in those days, but it wasn't. I was sitting there watching that game, and all I thought of was like, wow, these guys are slow. They're all slow. And I knew I thought they were athletic back in the day, but they are not nearly as athletic or explosive, dare I say talented, than the guys that play today. Today's athletes, today's basketball players are so much more talented and evolved than the guys. Even Magic, I hate to say it, Magic. Michael Cooper used to have the Koopa Loop. I mean, it was the alley-oop with Michael Cooper. I mean, everybody used to wait for it to happen, the Koopa Loop. Yeah, it was crazy. And even the Celtics, McHale, how slow is he? Are you kidding me? Danny Ainge would get kicked to the curb if he played today. McHale, Parrish, you name it. Just, and I will just say this. I've been looking at even Magic Johnson. He was so just soft.
Robotic.
He was. He was very stiff, and yeah. That's part of his game. But
well, he's tall, you know, too.
And even just the whole, hey, throw the ball in, throw the ball out, throw the ball in, you know, posting up. It's just there was nobody hung out outside the three-point line. Nobody. That was no man's land if you went out there. You weren't even going out to cover somebody if that happened. And that's what stood out to me. It was just – I know it's a debate that's gone on in the past, and it will always go on, but I changed my mind. And my emotional attachment is because I hadn't watched a game in the 80s in 30 years. But I watched it last night, and I was like, what the hell is going on?
I've always thought this, and I think it exists in all sports, including, by the way, your sport in football. I just think that the athlete today is a lot quicker, okay? They're stronger. But think of the difference of what they've gone through. In those days, you didn't have the same type of nutrition you have right now. You didn't have the gym or whatever. I can tell you the facilities the Celtics used to work with. They're working out at a Greek church over in Brookline, okay? Greek school. And they didn't have the facilities these guys have today. They didn't have all of these treatments. They didn't have 30 people on a staff that are sitting there going through every aspect of everything you need to do for training and strength conditioning. So I would say this to you. I've always felt that way, and I've always argued with my older friends who always stay in the past and tell me, no, it was much better in the older days. No, it was not. If you remember, I got into this argument with people about 6 months ago when I said that Marcus Smart is as good a defensive player as I've ever seen playing his position, and he can defend at different positions. And I said he was better than Dennis Johnson, and people said, call me up. I mean, what are you, crazy? Dennis Johnson right now, watch Marcus Smart. Match up the video. Marcus Smart is quicker. He's got better hands. DJ was phenomenal. At the time. Marcus Smart is better.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I saw Dennis Johnson out there. And I was like, okay, that's your best defensive player. Marcus Smart.
And Michael Cooper was your best defensive
player.
Exactly.
And Michael Cooper, real long, quick, could jump out of the gym. And I'm sitting there going, Marcus Smart is so much more tenacious.
Strong.
So much more and strong. Marcus Smart is thick.
Yep.
And he is scrappy. Marcus Smart would do well in the 80s because he would just fight. But it is funny just sitting there looking at it and the whole comparison, and I always hate it when the people would compare LeBron James and Michael Jordan. And I would say, if you took LeBron James right now and threw him in to 80s basketball, he would destroy them. He would take Parrish and dunk on Parrish every single day of the week. He would take Magic Johnson and dunk on him. See, here's the thing. LeBron's built like a tight end.
Yes.
Like a tight end, like a big, like Gronk, yet he's playing basketball. Like, no freaking way are you stopping him.
All right, so you finally come to the conclusion that I've come to a long time ago, many, many moons ago, that the athlete today is better than the athlete of yesterday, and the athlete tomorrow will be better than the athlete today, right? I truly believe that. But I do have a caveat. I do have something that might alter it somewhat. We're going to get to it coming up next. We'll get to the phone call, 617-779-7937, right here on OMF.
Brett, how do you feel? How does number 15 make you feel?
It feels great. Whatever happened to the Los Angeles dynasty? You guys were talking about a dynasty. Here's where it is, right here. That's the dynasty. We're the best team in the world right now. The best. Here they are out there.
Jeez, talk about...
But your dynasty, where's the Laker dynasty? Red couldn't help himself. No, he was one of those that he's going to throw it right back in your face, and that was his style, and he always had it. So before the break, and you had an epiphany last night. An epiphany, watching the Celtics and the Lakers, and came up to the conclusion, oh my God, for the first time you finally realized that basketball today is better. Guys are quicker, more athletic, stronger, etc., than guys were back in the 80s. I've always felt this. I've always felt that you could take the 60s and the 70s were better, and the 80s were better than the 70s and 90s. And it's always been better. It is. When you watch
Basketball was, to me, if you want to sit there and go, okay, Were the guards or the receivers better in the 60s and 70s than they are now? No. Not even close, because guards were 270 pounds back then. Now they're 340. So, you know, tackles are, you know, 360 pounds, and they run four nines.
So that's the point I'm trying to make, that I think the problem when you look at it is that there's no question that the athlete today in all sports is better than the athlete of yesterday. And when you look at the NBA, I laugh when I hear people come up to me and say, they don't play any defense in the NBA like they used to play in the 80s. Are you kidding me? They play far more defense in the NBA today than they did in the 80s. Marcus Smart, just look at the way he plays the game. You don't think so?
I would say, I think it's debatable. When I think of 80s basketball, I think of tough, just physical.
It was physical.
And everybody has to, I mean, there were certain guys that didn't play defense, but you had to. Now, there's more of an emphasis on shooting and scoring than there is defense. They rather have a track meet
than some stuck in the mud. I disagree with you.
You think it's now?
Yes, I think defense is much better now than it was in those days. Now, the game has changed in that you're...
I don't know.
Let me just finish, because you just talked about shooting. You're right. The game is a perimeter game right now. It's a slash and kick game, okay? It's a pick and roll game, but it's three-pointers. So think how far you have to go to play defense. You didn't have to do that. Watch these games in the 80s. So your guy was taking it down to the wing. He was well inside the three-point stripe. How far did you have to go to defend him? Nowadays, you've got to go out to the perimeter. I'll tell you what, with Steph Curry, you better start guarding him 35 feet away because he'll make that shot. That never happened in the 80s.
Okay, so let me see. So let me just play devil's advocate for this theory of yours. Is it then, if that's the case, do you think it's actually harder to play defense now? You think the defensive player has to be more skilled because there's so much more space to cover? Because back in the old days, back in the 80s, hell, you sit on the post, either the guy muscles you down or not. Hey, back in the 80s, you could hand check. You could actually cheat. You could grab. You could pull.
Well, you can play
zone. You
could push.
You got away with it. Now, get rid of that music.
That's my day.
You can play zone now. You could do that. I want to get back to the original point that I wanted to make, because I do have a caveat to all of this. Because you talked about players and individual players and how much better players are today. I totally agree with you. But now if we were to take the great players in the 1980s, if I were to take Larry Bird out of the 80s, Larry Bird was not the quickest guy out there afloat, right? He could rebound. He certainly could pass. And he certainly could shoot. And we put him in today's game, where Larry Bird could be more like a Steph Curry. He could start taking shots 30 feet away, 26 feet away. Are you telling me in this type of environment, with this type of nutrition, with this type of training, with this type of medical care that they have, Larry probably would have played an extra 3 years because his back wouldn't have fallen apart because he had no real treatment after games when his back was hurting him? So... Those players, if they grew up in this era, the great ones would still be great.
That's different. If you tell me James Worthy and Akeem Olajuwon had the training and that had the emphasis on camps and AAU, they'd be bigger, stronger.
Exactly.
Yes, but that's not the scenario. The scenario is if you plucked Larry Bird from 1984, 85, and you said, go play right now in 2020, he'd be good.
He'd be real good on the offensive end.
He'd be good. He's slow.
And he'd be a lot worse on the defensive end. And he wasn't a great defensive player to begin.
But
Larry's three-point shot, it's a three-point game today. Think about Larry. Larry would take 3 points. He averaged taking slightly over 2 3-pointers a game. These guys today take a dozen a game. Imagine if he took 10, 11, or 12 three-pointers in a game. Are you kidding me?
Well, I mean, I'm telling you, and then maybe his average would be different. Maybe because they were such a rarity.
He would be an offensive player.
Yeah, what stood out to me is just how more physically just gifted the players are now.
But you already said they go through AAU, they go through training.
That's fine.
Different nutrition, everything's different.
It was not a culture shock because it's a totally different scenario. But it was just a shock in general because all I had watched were highlights. All I had watched for years and years and years have been highlights. Pass here, shot here, quick little clips, you know, nothing in its entirety. And last night's game, they had Scal and Max talking during the intermissions.
Yeah,
during
they've been
the
doing
timeouts.
It on all these games. So
yeah, Scal's, I've been missing it. I haven't been paying attention. But last night, I was like, oh, I'm going to watch this one. I was just sitting there laughing. I was like, wow, I'm actually watching the whole game. The other thing that stood out to me was how deadly Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's skyhook was. I don't think that shot gets enough credit.
Yeah,
and the other
right.
thing is nobody copies it. Nobody has attempted to say, you know what? I'm going to go. I've heard there's the fadeaway. There's the Kobe, you know, that whole thing that Jason Tatum tries to, you know, copy. But nobody, no tall player has said, you know what? The skyhook is an underrated shot. Let me try and see if I can perfect that. Nobody does it. Who shoots the skyhook? He's the only person who shoots the skyhook.
And now, some guys. Yeah, do this like little, mini hook in the lane.
It's
but
different,
guys
but
that.
His
it's
version yeah.
no.
was arm extended.
Oh, it went to the ceiling. It went to the ceiling and popped
yeah.
down.
It went to
it was
the
a teardrop.
Yeah. It was crazy, and nobody, yeah. and his release, just in last night's game of the old game. His catch and release was it was so quick.
Yeah.
You couldn't guard it. So it just amazed me.
Well,
how.
The other thing, too, about him, think about him, is he had these long arms, you know, wingspan. So if he's doing it here with the right hand, the left hand is out here, so he's keeping the body, the defender, off of him, so he has plenty of room. I think in today's game, it would be more difficult because they would put smaller guys that have great leaping ability on him, and they would have an opportunity of getting up on that hand or certainly up on the ball. But you're right. I don't understand why more guys don't.
Well, like if I'm Taco Fall, I'm shooting the skyhook all
yes,
day long.
No question.
But you know who but nobody wants 2 points.
We haven't heard from Taco lately. Where's Taco? Oh, he'll be the mystery guest tomorrow.
Yeah.
All right, we got another hour to go. We're going to go 30 minutes commercial free, and we're only leaving you for a minute, and then Mutt's going to update everything here with COVID-19, and then we're going to get right back to the phone calls. We're doing OMF at our Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Home Studios. Lou's got the day off. He's going to take a long weekend.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.